should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Very nice.
Thank you.
So very nice to be here again. My name, as Doug mentioned, Ajahn Nisarano. And the reason you don't see me very often is not that I'm hiding out at the monastery and or they're keeping you there. I'm living in Sri Lanka and I have been doing that for the last 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the last 8 years of that time I have been living in a cave on the side of a mountain in the forest, and it overlooks the paddy fields below and the mountains in the distance. Very beautiful place with a stream by the side of it. So I can't complain. So it's and I have been ordained at Bodhinyana Monastery with Ajahn Brahm, so, and now it's my 21st year.
Wow.
So I get the key to the door. Hopefully it's the door to liberation. That's the best one. So very nice to be here. And this evening, first of all, the format will be, you know, like an introduction, the usual really, an introduction to the meditation I'm teaching this evening, which will be the scanning meditation. Did you do it last week? No. That's good. That's good. You arrive at what you find, oh, they're doing it again. But anyway, it'll be a different approach, that's for sure. And also, I'm going to, the focus for the first part of it, and also for the meditation, is a theme for what will be do-it-yourself programming 101. And meditation. So programming, very important in meditation, in our lives actually. I really notice when people talk to me about the negative states of mind they experience, the negative states of mind that I experience, I say to them, these are just mantras that we're running on, very negative mantras actually, and what we need to do is first of all be aware of them and then to reprogram as much as we can. Being aware of the negative thoughts which are feeding our states of mind, whether it be anger, depression, anxiety, is very important. Once we see them, then that actually disables them to a large extent. You don't believe the message so much. But of course, reprogramming, reconditioning is essential for all of us, actually, for our happiness and well-being. And of course, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, if I say to most people that we're programmed, we're all programmed, they'd probably say, you might say, what do you think? Are you programmed? Mm. Oh, gee, I thought some of you'd say, no way, no way. Of course we are all programmed, and this is a lovely story that Ajahn Brahm told on Friday night. Anybody saw Ajahn Brahm's Friday night talk? It was a nice story, actually, a very funny story. It's quite interesting because it's sort of an interesting angle on Ajahn Brahm when he was a lay person. And he said that when he was a lay person, he saw this advertisement, I think it was on television, for St. Bruno's tobacco. And it's pipe tobacco, yeah. You smoke it in a pipe. And, you know, when he was a student at Cambridge, he, you know, smoking a pipe was quite cool and very, very, you know, you were intellectual, you were, you know, smart or whatever. And evidently in this advertisement for St. Bruno's tobacco, what the image was, that this man, quite an ordinary-looking person, I think, ordinary-looking man, he lights up his pipe with St. Bruno's tobacco and he walks down the street. And then women start coming out of doorways, following him. This bevy of beauties, they say beauties, following him behind. And Ajahn Brahm saw this. It's hard to believe, isn't it, that he would really fall for something like that. But he found himself buying St. Bruno's tobacco. He already had the pipe, I think. And he did an experiment. He went into the streets of Cambridge, put his St. Bruno's tobacco in his pipe, and walked down the street. Nobody came out. I don't know if dogs came out or something like that. Certainly not the bevy of beauties that he saw in the advertisement. So, quite interesting. I just wonder why he, you know, you can't imagine Ajahn Brahm doing that. You know, it's quite funny, actually. And also, it does point to the fact, doesn't it, that advertising relies on programming us. You know, we even though we think we're choosing, don't we? We're influenced by the advertising. Otherwise, why would they bother? You know, spend millions on it, and it does work. Actually, it does shape what we buy. So, do you feel like you decide what you buy, what you select in the shops? Probably, you feel you've got a choice anyway. I think, you know. And in Buddhism, of course, we call this conditioning. This is conditioning, you know. But programming is another word for conditioning. Programming is a bit more modern, though these days you don't hear it that much, do you, really? You don't hear the word programming quite as much as you used to. But basically, conditioning is developing causes which give rise to different effects. And this is, most of the time, we're not controlling or having input into that. We're actually taking on various causes without, you know, sort of realizing that this is giving rise to effects. And everything that we think arises from a cause, everything we experience arises from a cause and gives rise to results. And it's interesting, if this is actually cause and effect when you think of it, it's a very basic concept, but actually it's the foundation of reality, isn't it? If there were no cause and effect, there wouldn't be impermanence, for instance. There wouldn't be, there'd be no movement of time, in a sense. And it's this which is actually the essence of the Buddha's teaching. This idea of cause and effect is at the centre, at the heart of it. And as I mentioned, everything that arises, this is causes, has to cease. Something that starts has to finish. That's the nature of life. And so all these causes and effects coming into existence, or causes the arising things coming into existence and then the passing away. And this is why we have this understanding of impermanence in the Anicca, we call it in Pali, or that nothing lasts. And this is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. It's why we find that we cannot find permanent satisfaction in this world, because there's no permanent happiness, because everything's moving all the time. So the good news, though, I always tell people, is that there's no permanent unhappiness. So that's rather good, I think. And also what it means in a very real way is, you know, where is the sense of permanent me, myself? If everything's moving, if we are all works in progress, which is the real me? The me of last week, last year, the me today? We're always changing, different. And this was really brought home to me recently when I was speaking to a lady who in Melbourne who had a stroke, and within earlier this year, and last year herself, who she was, her sense of herself, her sense of independence, was very different from what she was experiencing having had that stroke. So this is something, you know, we take on board, that this sense of self is always changing, always evolving. It's not permanent. It can't last. And very nice stories, I like the story anyway, that brings home the fact that of the importance of cause and effect in the Buddha's teaching, is actually a story about Venerable Sariputta. Do people know who he was, Venerable Sariputta? He was the, what do you say, right-hand disciple of the Buddha. He was the chief one in wisdom. And before he became a Buddhist monk, while he was still a layman, he was in a city in India, Rajagaha, and he saw a monk going on alms round. You know what alms round is? We go into the village and collect food. I do it in Sri Lanka every day at 6 a.m, going around the village. It's very good. And he saw this monk going on alms round in the city, Rajagaha, and he was so impressed by the way he walked. He walked just so peacefully, calm, very mindfully, and very, you know, a sense of elegance with it as well. And so after that monk had finished his alms round, he caught up with him and he asked him who his teacher was and what his teacher taught. And this monk, who was completely enlightened, fully enlightened, he was rather modest, I think. He said, "Well, I'm only new to the teachings." You know, if you're fully enlightened, you know the whole teachings, really. That's it. He said, "I'm only new to the teachings." But he said these words. And this, he said, "This is the essence of my teacher's teaching, the Buddha." He said, "Whatever things arise from a cause, of them the Buddha has told the cause, and of the ending of them, such as the teaching proclaimed by the great monk." That was what he taught him. And after that, after hearing that, we just heard that, in English anyway, he attained the first stage of enlightenment, Sotapanna. So that is the essence of Buddha's teaching, actually. And it's the essence of, as I said, reality of life. It's the essence of science, too. If there were no cause and effect, how could we have any laws? How could we develop any understanding of reality, as a physical reality, as we know it? And of course, what's the most famous, probably the most well-known aspect of cause and effect in the Buddha's teaching? Anyone got any ideas?
Karma.
Yes, you got in one. That's very good. Yes, karma. Yes, that's it. But it's an aspect of cause and effect, because it's to do with our moral or ethical intentions that manifest through our actions of speech, and bodily actions, and through the mind as well. So that creates, as the Buddha said, karma, which will be experienced as in the future as some sort of result. And of course the result is of the same nature as the original action, whether it be through body, speech or mind. And that will be, either if it's a positive action, then a positive result. If it's a negative action, a negative result. So this is one of the fundamental teachings of the Buddha, a very important one actually. And sometimes people say to me if they don't believe in karma, I think, goodness me, they haven't lived for a long time. You say something nasty to somebody, you'll get instant karma come back to you. It's really, you know, it's so easy to see in many ways. What's difficult for us is to see it from life to life, which of course, you know, most people, we don't know what's happened in our past lives, and we don't know what our future life will be like. So not everything is karma. This is a very important teaching of the Buddha too. Some different religions, Jainism for instance, would teach that everything is karma. And the Buddha said, no, that's not the case. If it were, there'd be no end to karma, no end to the effects of the results of it. And I'd just like to ask you, what things are we programmed by? Any ideas? It's easy, really, isn't it?
Family,
yes. Our parents, particularly, big influence when we start out. That's all we know, you know. Any other?
Teachers.
Education's a biggie, isn't it? Yeah.
Friends.
Friends, yeah. And that's right. Friends and the our mates, the school, the people we associate with. And one of the big ones these days.
Social media,
isn't it ever?
Don't
you? Yes, and lately you've probably all heard about, you know, some of the false news that goes around in the social media. Yes, we had experience of that in Sri Lanka in January, I think it was, and they had riots, anti-Muslim riots in some parts of the country, and a couple of Muslims were killed, and shops were burnt and all that sort of thing. It was due to false information on WhatsApp and other social media. And the government, and Facebook I think was the main one actually. And the government, what did they do? Close it down. Amazing, isn't it? We can't imagine that's possible, but they did. Because it was just stirring people up. Mm. And I heard in India they're having the same problem. There's lots of hangings, mob hangings and things because of this, and other places too. So you can see all this sort of programming that can arise. But one of the most important sources of programming?
Religion,
exactly. And it can be a positive or a negative. Many people would say there can be some very negative consequences, but there can be very positive consequences. So you often see, or I see, you know, practitioners, really good practitioners of any of the religions, they're usually good people, actually good people. And this is very important because religion often emphasizes ethical behavior. It should, anyway. And the essence of all religion, like is the essence of Buddhism, is to avoid the unwholesome, to avoid the negative in body, speech, and mind, and to do the good through body, speech, and mind, the positive. And the Buddha said, that to purify our minds, that they're very important, the essence of all religions. So it can be a great source of a good input, a good programming. There's positive programming and negative programming. And of course, tonight we're going to do some self-programming or reconditioning. Hopefully, anyway, see how it goes. We'll get to that. I like it because Ajahn Brahm, he calls it programming too, but he often, have you heard him call it brainwashing?
Mm-hmm.
He said he calls it brainwashing. He's very, that's a laugh, it's brainwashing. Where it's so easy to clean the brain, I think it would be quite good. But there's two aspects to it, you know, to programming the mind. And the most important one actually in a sense is intention. This is the power actually of, you know, having an aim, a goal, a purpose in mind. It's very, very important because it gives our lives meaning, it gives our lives strength as well and clarity. And also the second aspect of this programming is to be aware of motivation, where we're coming from. And this is very important in our lives and in meditation. So intention, as I mentioned, is what we're aiming at, what's the goal. So it's very important in meditation. If we don't have an aim or intention at the beginning of the meditation, I know what happens for me. I can soon be, you know, in slumberland. You nod off, you really relax. It's very good to have an intention. The whole purpose of intention is just to give direction to the mind. It's not a demand. It's not an expectation. We don't keep repeating it over and over again. we just have it in mind. Why am I meditating? What's the purpose of me sitting here with my eyes closed, however we're meditating? So it's good to have that in mind. It gives strength to the mind. And as long as I say, we don't expect, you know, unrealistic things to happen. Like we'll go into these incredible deep meditations or develop enlightenment from this meditation. These things come when we least expect them. And as I mentioned, motivation is where we're coming from, the state of mind that we have. And this is not only in meditation, in daily life as well. And this is very important to be aware of, because this is, in a sense, what we need to deal with in the meditation. If it's a positive state of mind, well, that's great. But if it's a negative one, it's good to be aware of it and to, you know, have the appropriate antidote for it. So as I said, you know, for intention particularly, you know, when we're meditating, something simple is very useful. Even just to have the intention to be here now is very good, you know, because people have busy lives, so we tend to drift off to the future, go to the past, do planning, think about what went well or what, usually it's not what went well, it's what went wrong, as it were, during the day. You know, so these things, you know, when we're meditating, we're taking a break from that. Just to be here now is really quite an amazing thing to do. And Ajahn Brahm has a nice simile for meditation, being like snakes and ladders. Do people know what snakes and ladders are? It's a game. And it's a game, you have a dice, and you have the players throw the dice, and they have a counter, and they move up this board, and the snakes... The ladders take you up, of course, and the snakes, if you get on one of those, it takes you down. And he uses that as in terms of the positive states of mind that take us up and the negative states of mind that take us down. And the snakes that take us down are the ones we have to watch out for. So we have to say to ourselves, I'll watch out for the snake of anger or the snake of thinking about the past or planning. Whatever our particular snake is, you know, there are many of them that are lurking in our minds. Just to be aware, watch out for it, is very, very useful, because then it doesn't have the power to spring out and take over the the mind, the meditation. You can find meditations can turn into planning sessions or, you know, remembering sessions or regretting sessions, whatever it is, so before you know it. So when we, with this, it's very important to ask ourselves where we're coming from when we sit down to meditate. What's the state of the body and the mind at this particular moment? And then we can, having decided what it is, then we can bring up the appropriate, what's the wholesome or what's the positive thing we can do with this state of mind. If it's, for instance, tiredness, if you're very tired or whatever, just to bring up the idea of energy or light can be very useful. If one's, you know, feeling very wound up or angry, whatever, or annoyed, irritated by the day, then just to make peace with that, it can be very useful. There are lots and lots of positive emotions that are very useful. Metta, loving kindness, we just did chanted about metta, is very, very useful. Having metta for ourselves, for the mind states we experience, even the negative mind states, very important. Most often we get into combat with them. We want to fight them, get rid of them, throw them out of the mind. But that doesn't work actually. But what does work and dissolves, can dissolve them, not necessarily, is using metta, you know, that kindness towards them. But also gratitude, being thankful for things, is a wonderful positive emotion. Giving is another one. And contentment, peace, there are lots of them. Letting go is very good, letting be. So tonight, as I mentioned, getting close, is the scanning meditation. Do people know what the scanning meditation is? Have you heard of it? It's quite, sometimes called sweeping meditation, but I find that confusing. Do you? Yeah, body sweep. But I always think of sweeping like a broom. So I prefer like scanning. And, I think more modern sort of illustration, that would be MRI. People had MRI scans. Mm-hmm. you know, you go into this tunnel, Doctor Who like, and all this sort of stuff, and it goes through the body with all these arrays or whatever. No, sound, I think it's sound. And it's most been made famous, of course, by who? Anybody know? The most famous exponent, you say, exponent.
Richard Davidson.
Wow, I don't know him.
Goenkaji.
Yes, Goenkaji. And people heard of Goenka? He's got centres everywhere. He's got centres here in Perth, a centre, I think, at least one. It's amazing what he's achieved. But there are many different approaches to the standing meditation. And Aya Kenma, who's one of my teachers, she used to teach it. Two different types of it, actually. And so it can be very taught in different ways and used in different ways. And as Aya Kenma used to say, the right way is the way that works for you. It doesn't have to be in the book, but if it works, if it brings more peace, more stillness, more clarity, more mindfulness, more wisdom, right, good, it's working. So this is the ultimate test. And how do we do this meditation? In this meditation, we're either paying attention to the sensations in the body. This is more like Goenka, you know, and the sensations can be things like warmth or coolness, itching, pressure, sharp pains. Sometimes I hurt, so I remember I came with like stabbing pains. I thought, wow, if one had stabbing pains, I think it would be off the cushion at the door, or heading for a Panadol or something. Anyway, sharp pain, dull pain, coming and going, you know, the movement of the pain, heaviness, lightness, hardness, softness, tingling, no feelings, it's fine. But these are all just experience, ways of labelling the experience. We don't need to label it. We don't even need to describe them. Just to be there, to be aware of them. We don't have to. Nobody's going to ask you afterwards what, you know, what sensations did you have. So you can either have the sensations, these are the bodily sensations, or go for the feelings. And in terms of the Buddha's teaching, feelings or Veda Nupassana is always the pleasant feeling or the unpleasant feeling or neutral feeling. So is it pleasant, what I'm experiencing? Is it unpleasant or is it neutral? So you're just aware, you know. Unpleasant's very obvious. The pleasant, you know, even neutral can be very pleasant, actually. And as I say, no need to label it at all, what we're experiencing. We're just experiencing it. And in fact, one of the sort of very nice meditation that Byron Katie had. Do you know Byron Katie?
Yeah. Remember?
Lovely. She did. She had this walking morning walk meditation that I really liked. And the first thing she says, don't label anything, don't describe anything, just walk. And it's really pleasant just to do that. You know, you're not looking at, oh, that's a magnolia. Oh, that's a gum tree. Oh, the sky is blue. There's nothing. Just to be there with what you're experiencing. It's really lovely. You know, you're just open to it. Because we don't realize how much this description really limits the experience of what's happening now. So very, very lovely to do that, actually. So no need to describe all these sensations or pleasant, unpleasant, neutral feelings that you're having, just to be aware of them. And when the mind wanders off, we can bring it back gently to wherever we were when it wandered off, you know, whatever body part we were focused on. And if we get completely lost, then we can either at the top or the bottom, the top of the head, or at the tips of the toes. And one of the things that I think is very important, because, you know, when I first learned this, I thought, oh, I've got to get the order right. You know, you've got to do it in the right order. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. As long as it flows for you, that's the main thing. And as I say, in this meditation, you can do it very slowly, go through the body very slowly, or you can go through much faster, depending on, you know, how you find it, what's working for you. I tend to do it now, I'll do it, the first one slow, and then you can do it much faster. And more recently I've been thinking of it like, the image for me is, when we're sweeping from the top to the toes, it's like putting on a jumper or something, pulling it down, you're pulling it down the whole way to the toes. Or, and then when you start from the toes, it's like pulling out some pants or a wetsuit. And you're going over the whole body and you're aware of the sensations or the feeling as you go. So this can be quite a good way to do this this meditation. I find it useful anyway. And I think just be interesting to see how you find it. For me, I find it actually quite joyful. I get a lot of joy from it, and it's quite nice. Very grounding sort of meditation, being with the body as it is here and now. This is a lovely thing with the body. It's here and now. The breath is here and now too. It's not last breath or a future breath. It's just now. You know. So it brings us back, because we live a lot of the time in virtual reality. So this is, the body is here and now. It reminds us. So if you'd like to find a comfortable posture, it's not much change, is it? Usually, you know, just something that you feel a bit of energy and a little bit. So now we can just sense that we can close our eyes and just sense the body, how it is, and make any adjustments that we need to make it more comfortable, more balanced, more relaxed. We can move the shoulders. That's usually the area that gets more tension. Just settling into the body. And first we can just ask what our intention for meditating this evening is. What's my purpose for meditating tonight? Why am I meditating tonight? Secondly, we can ask, where am I coming from? What state is my mind? What do I need to watch out for this evening? Is it tiredness, sleepiness, agitation, restlessness, whatever it is? So we can tell ourselves, watch out for this sleepiness, whatever it is. And we can ask ourselves, what positive state of mind would help? And this evening, perhaps we can just give a gift of kindness, friendliness to the body, to our minds, giving a gift. Giving this gift to whatever we experience, whether it's pleasant, neutral, or unpleasant. Just being friendly, being kind to whatever we experience. Now we can give this gift to the body and relax the body mentally. Starting at the top of the head, the back of the head, the sides of the head, relaxing the head, soothing it, giving it this mental massage, this kindness, this warmth. And moving the attention down the face to the forehead and around the eyes, the cheeks and the mouth, soothing them, relaxing them, giving these areas this warmth, allowing them to relax. We can bring to mind the neck, all around the neck, and giving this kind mental massage, allowing it to relax, releasing any tension, discomfort, pain. And then moving the attention to the right shoulder, starting at the neck and moving along the right shoulder. Soothing it, allowing it to let go of the burdens of the day, the tensions of the day. Bringing to mind the right arm, starting at the top of the right arm and moving the attention slowly down the right arm to the elbow, wrist, hands and fingers, giving it a good mental massage, soothing the aches and pains and allowing the right arm to become as comfortable as possible. To the left shoulder, starting at the neck and moving along the left shoulder, soothing it, calming it, relaxing it as you go. Now we can bring to mind the left arm, starting at the top of the left arm and moving slowly down the left arm to the elbow, wrist, hands and fingers, soothing it with this warm, kind, friendly attention. This gift of metta, of loving kindness. we can bring to mind the back, starting just below the shoulders and moving the attention slowly down the whole of the back, giving it this warm, kind attention, this massage using the mind. Front of the body, starting at just below the shoulders and moving our attention slowly down the front of the body, down the chest, the stomach and the abdomen, giving these areas this warmth, this kindness, this friendliness, this healing mental massage. Now moving the attention to the right leg, starting at the top of the right leg and moving the attention all around to the knee, to the ankle, the foot and the toes, relaxing it, allowing tensions and pains to release, healing this kindness and warmth, loving kindness. And now we can bring to mind the left leg, starting at the top of the left leg and moving slowly down all around the left leg, down to the knee, ankle, foot and toes. This warm, relaxing, soothing attention. And we can just become aware, the whole body sitting here in the present moment, just sitting, nowhere to go, nothing we have to do, just simply sitting. And now we can start the scan, starting at the toes and moving up the body, like pulling on a pair of pants or putting on a wetsuit, something we're pulling up, and we become aware of the feet and the legs. Both the legs together. And then pulling it up further, the front and the back of the body. Just aware of the feelings or sensations. And you don't have to name them. Just experience them. Be aware of them. And pulling up this wetsuit or whatever it is over the arms. The hands up to the arms, to the shoulders, neck, and the whole of the head. Just aware as we go. And then we can reverse the process and start. As if we're putting on a jumper, pulling it down over the head, face, neck, the shoulders, the arms, the hands, the front and the back of the body. And the two legs down to the feet and toes. And we can just keep reverse the process and go up. And keep scanning. scanning the body from the toes to the top of the head, and from the head to the top of the toes, pulling on something, pulling something up, and pulling something down, and being aware of the sensations, whether it be hardness, softness, warmthness, coldness, whatever it be, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, as we go along. No need to name. close to the end of the meditation, so we can just ask ourselves how we feel now, how do I feel now? Was I aware of sensations or feelings? Do I notice? And what effect did that have on the mind? Share the energy of this meditation with all those in this room, in this hospital, the surrounding areas, with our family and friends wherever they are, and with all beings everywhere. They may develop peace, joy, happiness in their lives. The aspiration, wish to develop more of this scanning body, to ground ourselves in the present moment, to be here now with the body, wherever we are, whether it's at home, work, school, wherever we find ourselves, the body is with us, it's grounding us in the present moment. To come slowly out of meditation, not to rush it, and not to allow for the transition. So now, just to see if there are, ask if there are any comments, questions, or complaints. Complaints are always interesting. I don't get any of them actually. Questions, comments, especially not complaints. It's often a good sign that meditation has, you know, been peaceful, has allowed the thinking to reduce, and for us to become a little stiller than usual. So this meditation can be very, very useful. I enjoy doing this one, and I hope you find some benefit in it as well. There's something, as I say, we can do in during the day when we're not too busy, you know, if we just find ourselves sitting, just go through the body. And as you probably noticed, it's quite simple. When I came used to teach it, it could take 45 minutes to an hour just to go, you know, through one scanning thing, just teaching the basics of the meditation. But if it's that long, I think it puts most people off, and it's good for the to move through it in a rate, a pace that's comfortable for you. You know, whether it's slower or faster, it's up to you really, you know. I know, for instance, Goenka, when they really get going with it, they, on the in-breath, down from the head of it, at the top of the head, to the tips of the toes, the out-breath, from the tips of the toes to the head, That's really fast, isn't it? I think it's a bit fast, actually, for me. So whatever is comfortable for you, and see what results you get from it. That's the litmus test. Is if you're getting, you know, developing peace and stillness in the mind, calm, joy. These are all good indicators that the meditation is going in the right direction. And no questions? This meditation is very good for health too. They teach this often for health. If we have any health issues, it has a very healing effect, this scanning of the body. And I know Mahasi Sayadaw, he's quite famous. He didn't actually teach scanning, but he talked about Dhamma therapy using meditation, mindfulness, basically attention to the body, to heal the body. And it can have a very powerful effect, the mindfulness of giving attention to the body. Very often we don't give much attention to the body. We use it, but we don't give much attention or have much appreciation or gratitude for what it allows us to do. We tend to focus on what it doesn't allow us to do. You know, I can't read anymore when books are close up, or whatever it is that we find, you know, the aches and pains that we experience. One of the important things for healing, though, using a meditation like this, is that we don't, if we've got issues, health issues, whatever they be, cancers or other things, you know, pains, various illnesses, is not to have negativity towards those illnesses, those cancers or whatever they are. To have this mind of loving kindness, this acceptance, this positive energy. Because if we have negativity towards these, the complaints we find in the body, it will only add to the negativity in the mind and will not have a healing, it won't have a healing effect on those areas. But metta, loving kindness, relaxing, being with, accepting what is we don't like to accept, hard to accept, can have a healing effect, and things can move on and can really heal. And when we pay attention to the body, it's a bit like when we pay attention to a person. You notice if you're with somebody and you're checking your smartphone, or you're looking over your shoulder, or you're looking somewhere else, the person concerned is probably not very impressed. They feel like they're being ignored. And they probably are. Or they feel like they're not that important because of smartphone. And these days the smartphones are very important, aren't they? We see everybody peering at them. But if you look at the person, you'll give attention to them. If you are with them, this is they like that. And it's a connecting process. We connect with the person. And it's very much like this with the body too. We are with the body. If we give attention to the body, if we notice the body, this has a very positive effect on the body. The mind actually paying attention to the body. The body is our vehicle for the mind. But sometimes we forget about the vehicle, except when we get aches and pains. Then we're reminded. Then we're quite aware of it. And even though it's often thought of as a vipassana technique, it's not many people who use this technique actually experience very deep, peaceful states. And even I've heard jhana, this is a very deep meditation that Ajahn Brahm is often talking about. So it can be used for, obviously can use it also for wisdom, because the body, all these aches and pains are teaching us. In fact, Ajahn Chah, a famous meditation teacher in Thailand, who passed away in 1992, he said, with a lot of the older people that were, he was teaching, when they're getting up, he said, they go, oh, getting down, and go, oh, he said, you're getting Dhamma teachings about the nature of the body, about the nature of reality, too. This is all part of it. So we learn a lot from the body, we learn a lot about the mind as well, the reaction the mind has. Body and mind interact, and especially when we're when we haven't developed the mind very much, when things are happening with body, painful things, illnesses, these sorts of things, it can affect the mind very strongly, and you know, we can find the mind is really agitated, worried, anxious about, you know, this cancer, this whatever we've developed. This is actually part of nature. This is natural, that the body will develop illnesses and so forth. But the mind, of course, doesn't have to go the same way. And this is one of the teachings the Buddha gave to one of his elderly disciples, who said that he couldn't come to see the Buddha very often because he was often sick. And the Buddha's advice to him was, even though your body may be sick, do not let your mind be sick. So this is not easy, actually, you know, if we haven't developed the mind. And when we develop the mind, then it can develop this independence and stability, wisdom, understanding, even happiness or joy in difficult situations. And it's very, I think most people notice this, when we do the scanning meditation, you see that a lot of our emotions, aren't they, stored in the body. We lock them in. You know, the tummy can be a lot of fear. Fear can be in the tummy. You feel the tension in the shoulders. And the various emotions that are in the body. So when we do the scanning meditation too, this is a healing on an emotional level too. It's very interesting, you know, all these, you see the mind-body interaction very much, because often our mental states, in a real sense, are sculpting the body. So the body starts to take the shape and form of our mental state, which is quite interesting to see, you know, whether it be very relaxed, whether it be very tense, anxious, or depressed, whatever it is. These mind states, they have an impact on the body. And of course, with the scanning, as I say, this is relaxing, giving attention to these areas, allowing those emotions to release, to reduce. And the important thing about that is too, that regardless of, as I mentioned before, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, to have this kindness to whatever we're experiencing, or whether it be neutral, is very important. And Ayakim also had a very nice description for this. She said this scanning meditation, she called it sweeping, body sweep, was like clearing out a house full of rubbish. You know, it's got a lot of dirt and grime from the past, and full of stuff, cobwebs and whatnot. And when we scan, it's like cleaning the mind. Not cleaning the body, but cleaning the mind, letting go of this rubbish, creating light, clarity, and lightness in the body. So I hope you find continue try it, and see if it works for you. Did people find that they found it useful? Yeah. It's a different one. And one of the nice things about this meditation is it's fairly active, isn't it? You're moving the attention. So if you're very tired or something like that and you want to do a meditation, this can be quite good. Because one of the things you can do when you're tired is do something a little bit active. And so it keeps the mind moving, and then the time, pick up energy, and you can stay with it perhaps more than if you go, say for instance, if you're using the breath, you can drift off in no time if you're very tired. It can be very relaxing, you know, which you may need. That's part of it, actually. So these things, this meditation can be very useful, and I like it very much, actually. I enjoy doing this one and find it very useful. And as I said, it can be like a cleaning out of the mind and healing for the body. And this is where, you know, this programming that I mentioned, very, very useful in daily life. You know, often we, I've been teaching this in Melbourne actually a lot, we take our wheelie bins out to the verge every week. If we didn't take the wheelie bin out to the verge every week, it would be very smelly at home, very unhygienic after a time. And I say to people, how often do we take the wheelie bin, the mental wheelie bin out, with all the rubbish? all the anger, irritation, resentment, disappointment, jealousy, envy. How often do we take it out to the Virgin, let go of it? This is the important thing. And this meditation is the way of helping us to do that, to let go, to let these things be. The big problem, as I always say to people, I say to people in Melbourne, is that we find it difficult to let go of the rubbish. Firstly, because it's our rubbish. So this is very important. It's my rubbish, you know. And we hold on to it for dear life. We may even think it's a treasure, these terrible pains, hurts, and disappointments from the past. But really, this is our first job, is to recognize rubbish for rubbish, actually. How do we recognize rubbish? See whether it's bringing us any happiness, peace, joy, enjoyment of life, or the reverse. Is it bringing us suffering, anger, more irritation, less quality in our life? If it's doing that, rubbish, out with it. in a kind way, of course. So this is very important to see that, you know, really it's just rubbish, it's not our rubbish. And in fact, this is the reality of working with the mind, is the negative states of mind, they're not us. If they're us, we can never get rid of them. They can never go, because they're part of us. But they are, they're just visitors. They're rather negative visitors that don't enhance our life. So to let go of them is a big plus. So that's the first thing, to realise that they are rubbish, and also to realise they're not our rubbish. Then we can let go of them. Then we can take the wheelie bin out to the verge and let it go. So it's very important. This is what meditation is for. As I mentioned before, the three things that the essence of Buddha's teaching, or essence of religion in general, is to avoid the negative, to do the positive, whether it be through body, speech, or mind, and to purify the mind. This is what we're doing in the meditation, purifying the mind, giving it a break from the negativity, breaking for a time the flow of negativity that we can experience, giving ourselves a holiday, giving ourselves a chance to see, to go on vacation, go on holiday. See what the mind is like when it's more pure. So it's very useful to use these meditations, the standing, for instance, in daily life too. I say to people that the Buddhist teaching really is a 24/7 practice, because it's all about the mind. And the mind we have with us 24 hours a day. And we have to look after the mind for our own happiness and well-being. One of the problems with the programming that I mentioned, a lot of the programming, we're not really filtering. You know, how many people, for instance, you know, they watch the news, they read it on the internet, or they see it on YouTube, wherever they see it, and they get angry and upset and they get irritated, annoyed. I think, what good has that done them? You know, what good? We have to have what the Buddha called sense restraint. Just say, no, this is not doing me any good. I won't buy into this, you know. I will filter. I will choose what programming I take on board. And this is the whole point of the Buddhist teaching, is to take on the positive programming, the programming that leads to happiness, joy, and enhances our lives, not the programming that gets us wound up, angry, and self-righteous. You know, this is a very dangerous thing we find, you know, when we feel right. Goodness me, what we can do and say when we feel right is terrible. It can lead to very drastic consequences. So this is a very important thing with the Buddhist teaching, to use this programming. And of course, do people know, have heard of affirmations? Remember affirmations? I think it's very 70s, isn't it? 1970s. You don't hear very much about affirmations these days. But they're useful in that sense, you know, that they point out a way to look at things that is much more positive, can be useful for that. And the Buddha also, it's surprisingly effective, this one, and I've used it in my life too. And he had this teaching where he encouraged his disciples to use this program, which was may my mind not be excited by things that are provocative of greed or anger or hatred or delusion. Just to keep that in mind. This is like keeping the snakes in mind, actually. If we have that in mind, especially, you know, when you go to work and you think of somebody and immediately you get wound up just thinking of them, you haven't even met them. Good to program to say, when I meet him or her, may I not get irritated and annoyed with them, you know, just to keep that in mind. And you may think that sounds all too easy, but see, I've been surprised when I've used this programming in my daily life, how effective it is. I think, good grief, how does it work? Just taking that programming on board can really affect the way I interact or experience things. And it's very important, as I said, you know, that we choose what programming we take on board. Be aware of it. You know, all the advertisements, all the things on television, the internet, the newspapers, and all this, all the input we're receiving. Choose that which really benefits us, brings us happiness, brings us well-being. Because mostly, news is generally bad news, very little good news. There are good news channels, actually. I've heard there are. But the ones that make the news, or all the things that make the news, are usually bad news. Yes. My monk, Ajahn Brahm's predecessor, Ajahn Jagra, he once said, they will never make a teledrama about someone keeping five precepts. When you think about it, it's all about killing, stealing, adultery, breaking up people's sexual relationships, lying, drinking, alcohol, drugs, the works. That's teledrama. So nobody's going to. So the news is like that, you know, and people, it's quite exciting. I mean, I'm always amazed. Aren't you amazed with people who like these horror movies? I mean, good grief. The stuff we're putting in our minds when we watch these horror movies. I think, oh, when later, you know, they will visit us again, you know, in our minds. And I think, good grief, then it won't be so pleasant. When we're not in the movie and we're experiencing them, thinking they're real, they're images, that they're real. And a very important thing with, especially as I mentioned, programming in terms of intention and motivation, for us to check up on what we're aiming for in our lives, especially for important things. You know, what's my goal? What's my purpose? Is important, because sometimes, you know, we're not clear about that, what our intentions are, and things can go horribly wrong because we have a vague idea of where we want things to go, the outcome, but we haven't been clear about what our intentions are. So this is something that, you know, we need mindfulness for, basically. And also where we're coming from is very important to check out before we do important things. Are we coming from anger, greed, hatred, delusion, these things, negative states of mind? You can feel them. Negative states of mind usually, as Ayakema often said, they feel heavy, they feel dark, they feel unpleasant. You can tell. And if we're going to make a decision, a particularly important one, then that's not a good state of mind to come from. Good to just get a bit still, let those states of mind go, and then make the decision from a state, from a place of peace and wisdom. So it's always good to ask, what's my intention now? It's an important thing. And where am I coming from? It's very useful. And when we have this sense of intention in our lives, it gives us real direction. It gives us purpose in mind. And as I often give the illustration that if you want to go somewhere, if you want to go to Darwin, for instance, if you don't have the intention in mind, how likely are we to arrive in Darwin? Very unlikely. So this is why it's very good to give the meditation, have an intention in mind. Ajahn Brahm doesn't emphasize this. I do. This is the difference. I find it very good because I'm not making orders or demands. I'm not saying it has to be like this, but I want to point the mind in the direction of Darwin at least, so it knows I'm here to meditate. I'm not here to even that is a good intention. I'm here to meditate, rather than, you know, shopping or planning or revisiting the past, whatever it is that we can do for the time of the meditation. And it gives a lot of energy and clarity too when we have an intention, as I say. But it's good that our intentions be realistic, not unrealistic, because if they're unrealistic, they will just get disappointed and frustrated. You know, if we plan to be in jhana in our meditation and it doesn't happen, we may think, it doesn't work, Ajahn Brahm's got it wrong. But it's when we least expect things, actually when we don't expect things, they tend to occur. And actually see in the poems of the enlightened monks and nuns, they're often the enlightened experience that they had happened when they least expected it. Like one of the nuns, for instance, Patachara, Venerable Patachara, she was washing her feet, and she poured the water on her feet, and some of it went a little distance down the slope and sank into the ground, and some went further and sank into the ground, and some went a lot further and sank into the ground. And when she saw that, she reflected on impermanence, because she had her whole family die in one day. Her children, her babies were like the water sinking into the ground, very close to her feet, and her brother and her husband was like the water that sank into the ground a little further along, and then further away was like her parents when they died too. And that was enough for her to, that insight was enough, simple, isn't it? It was enough for her to become fully enlightened, you know, see impermanence. This is the first stage of enlightenment, is actually seeing impermanence, that things, everything that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. Very simple to say, but when it's seen deeply, that's the breakthrough to enlightenment. So, I encourage you to go for it. But go for it in a skillful way, not in a demanding way. So I hope this has been of use to you this evening. I think the scanning meditation and using intention to program, have a goal, have a purpose, but also to use intention to bring out positive emotions that you can use with the meditation. Like this evening, that gift of friendliness, kindness, you can use with whatever you experience in the meditation, you know, as you're scanning. And it's a very, very good way to keep the mind interested in the meditation. If there's a very pleasant emotion, pleasant feeling happening in the mind, then it will pay attention to that and stay with the meditation. Enjoy the meditation. So I encourage you to try it out at home and see the results. So any questions before we finish off? It's now 8:30. That's by this clock anyway. Good. That's right. Mm-hmm. Righto, Doug. Over to you for the announcement. Do you want the neck piece? It didn't strangle me.
Good. Yeah, thank you very much, Ajahn. And on behalf of the group, thank you very much for coming here tonight and your talk on meditation. Thank you. Oh, good.